If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
Welcome to my favorite Elliott Smith song. If you haven't listened to us before, we're all about keeping Elliott Smith's legacy alive by speaking to well-known fans about their favorite song of his. So hi, thank you for joining us for this, our final episode of the season. Our guest today is Naima Bock. Naima is a London-based musician who started out her career as a member of the band Goat Girl. Since leaving them, she's pursued a successful solo career, releasing two studio albums, Giant Palm, which came out in 2022, and Below a Massive Dark Land, which came out in 2024. Naima describes Elliott Smith's Either Or album as a foundation for her, so it was great to have the chance to chat with her for this episode. Here's the conversation we recorded earlier this month.
I'm Naima Bock. My favourite Elliott Smith song is Miss Misery.
I'll fake it through the day with some help from Johnny Walker Red. Send the poison rain down the drain to put bad thoughts in my head. The two tickets torn in half and do you miss me? Miss misery like you say you do.
Tell us firstly, why have you selected Miss Misery?
So I heard it not on Good Will Hunting for the first time. I just heard it on the deluxe edition of EXO. Which I actually don't know when the deluxe edition was released, but I heard it was like right the last very last track on the deluxe edition of that album, and I was probably like your classic Elliott Smith age of 15, and I think I was on a bus. And I remember his voice kind of grating me at first because I had all of these ideas about what kind of music I should like. And then that very quickly evaporated and started, a very special musical relationship.
So this song was your Elliott Smith kind of entry point.
Yeah, that's sort of why I chose it for that reason. Like I said before, I have loads. The choosing a favorite song is difficult, because I couldn't even really say that it's my favorite song, but I thought I'd choose the entry point song and then also the song that I covered the most and, learned the chord progressions and the lyrics. And also it was at a time when I was experimenting with how to sing. And I very much ended up not singing like Elliott Smith at any point of the day. But it was still his range and the way that he controlled his voice whilst also making it sound slightly like out of control was a thing that I was trying to replicate a bit. And that song was like my starting point.
Men in the park read the lines in my head, told me I'm strong, hardly ever wrong. I said, man, you mean you. That involved a trip out of town to a place I've seen in a magazine that you'd left lying around.
What particularly grabs you about the song?
I mean, it's a pop song. In that way, it has that addictive quality that I really enjoy about pop songs, and like and the way that I had to listen to it over and over and over again on repeat. Although, like, I'm not someone that analyzes songs in terms of, you know, like, this chord structure or these notes mean that it does this to my brain. Like, I don't really work in that way, because yeah. That's not how I write songs, and so I don't listen to songs like that. But I found it was very catchy. Yeah. And it was very touching, and it just, I don't know, it just moved me in a way that's quite difficult to put into words. But like that, I guess, like, that's the case with a lot of Elliott Smith stuff. It's just, it kind of gets under your skin in this unique way that really no one else, like, there's other people that have done a similar thing, but it's very unique to Elliott Smith, the way that his music has affected me emotionally.
Hmm. And do you like the kind of sort of confessional nature of the lyrics as well?
Yeah, I do. I mean, the lyrics were a big part of it, and there was a kind of dissecting of the lyrics, and it being a bit of a story. There was just, yeah, yes, those things.
The story aspects, like the how, you know, he's like talking to someone or about someone.
Yeah.
And you can kind of follow what he's feeling.
Yeah. Like, even though there's, you know, there's all these names that you don't really understand, or like, especially me at the time didn't understand. And then I kind of, you know, picked it apart a little bit more. But there's just so any song that's a story, you know, and especially at that time, I was listening to melodies more than I was lyrics, but, you know, the older that I've gotten, lyrics seem to be trumping the melodies for me. Mm. But obviously, Elliott Smith has both of those. But as I've grown older, especially with that song, the lyrics have kind of just, it stood out to me more how good they are and how much they have. It's like a good book, you know, so you're kind of on the edge of... You're always like on the edge of your seat waiting for the next thing. But that's the same with all of his songs. Yeah, like literally all of them.
Was there one you were going to say that?
No, I guess there's some songs that are more repetitive that have... Well, but then, no, I'd say that like all any like repetition in the songs as well. And like with, you know, lyrically there's some... Like Alameda is a good example of a song where it has, you know, the repetition of the chorus and then there's just like this one little change at the end on the last chorus.
Mm.
And that's such a, you know, that's such a perfect structure. And that's yeah. something that I've kind of tried to do a bit, because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of that remind, like the, what he does there in Alameda and in like other songs as well, where there's just this very subtle change, and it might be in conjunction with a chord change, I'm not sure, but a lot of, you know, Brazilian classics do that as well, where they do the same vocal melody, or it kind of, for me, lives in the same place as what they do, where they have the same vocal melody, but with a different chord structure, just at the end is like the last, kind of the last point of the song, which gives it that, I guess, variation.
Yeah. And you're expecting it to come around again, and then it's like, oh, okay, that's different. That's sort of keeping you on your toes.
Yeah. And that's something I have to consciously think about doing, because my inclination to the songwriting is just to repeat, you know, which a lot of people, it's easier, you know, it's a lot easier.
You mentioned when you were talking about Miss Misery, you know, some of the references that he says in the song that you had to kind of look up or you didn't quite understand. Similar, I think, you know, similar to me, obviously, same growing up in the UK, like, and also being a teenager, Johnny Walker Red, for example, was not really...
I was going to say that one. Yeah, that's the... I mean, yeah, those are the ones... What do you mean? Like, is it... You think it's kind of like a cultural difference as well?
I think sometimes. I'm trying to think about Miss Misery exactly. Johnny Walker Red, definitely, because I'm, you know, I think similarly to you, I was probably 15 when I... first heard it, so I didn't really know what Johnny Walker Red Label was, so that was one in particular. But there are other references, like Christian Brothers, for example. I've spoken about before on the podcast with a guest, but like had no idea what that was and had to look that up. And there are other bits and pieces like that.
What
it's also a drink.
Is it? Yeah, yeah.
It's a malt liquor.
That's a good name for a drink. Yeah, it's good to, I think it's good to find out like what this, what it is, the thing that's a bit of a mystery, even though it can be kind of, because like with Johnny Walker Red, I thought he was just talking about like a person.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a cool name.
Yeah, it's just one of his friends.
Yeah. Wait, so you do you think you were around the same age when you started listening to him?
Probably, yeah. At 15 or 16, I think that's the kind of impressionable age.
Yeah. Yeah.
Had a compilation album. I think it was a Rough Trade compilation album.
Oh, really?
It wasn't Miss Misery one. I think it was Needle in the Hay. But a similar sort of thing where it's like came on and it's like, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. That's true, actually. I do think, I would say that after Needle, yeah. Needle in the Hay was one, was probably like the second or third, because I gotten really into that, did like kind of extended deluxe XO album, and then stopped listening to him for a while. I didn't quite move on to another album, and then I watched the Royal Tenenbaums, which is probably another very obvious gateway into Ellie Smith and the Needle in the Hay playing on that very sad scene.
Yeah,
that was like, you know, I actually love that film. I think it was such a good film, and that's such a good use of that song in that film.
Yeah, it works very well. Tried to get Wes Anderson on the podcast many times with no success so far, but you know, we can still dream.
But I like that also, it's good that you're doing, because I you know what, I always thought, especially with Elliot Smith, there's a lot of people that I, you know, have a very strong love for him and listen to him loads when they're teenagers, and then they kind of like relegate that to their teenage world and don't really carry on. And a lot of people do that with a lot of different music. But I never did that. I never did that with him, or with, you know, Songs Ohio, or with like all of these sort of foundational indie kids.
Yeah.
Like I just always could have continued to listen to them and love them. And it never, like listening to Elliot Smith just doesn't make me sad. If I am sad, then it's good to listen to, but it's also not, I can listen to it in any mood, which is not something that other people don't seem to have that so much. They kind of go, oh, it's too sad. I'm like, it's not, like it is and it isn't. It's emotional, but
yeah,
it's not that it, you know, it's emotional and it's kind of poignant, and it feels like it elevates life, and it doesn't need to necessarily be in a happy way. But it elevates it when I listen to it.
You mentioned that you covered Miss Misery, or you do cover Miss Misery. What's it like covering it? Is it a difficult song to cover? What do you kind of like factor in when you're playing it?
Honestly, I covered it because it was one of the less difficult songs to cover. So like the chord structure is a little bit more, you know, what my fingers are used to. It's so satisfying. It's so satisfying. It doesn't get old. It doesn't get boring. I don't really play it. I've never actually played an Elliot Smith song live at a show. Although I've kind of been teetering on the edge of playing Angelis live a few times, because you know, if you have to try and find a song that really suits your voice. And Miss Misery for me is one that probably doesn't suit my range loads, but I just enjoy playing it. But Angelis kind of fits in the right range. And actually, but then there's a friend of mine, Shannon Lay, does a really beautiful version of Angelis.
Yes. Yeah. We've had Shannon on the podcast before.
Yeah, it's so good. So I'm going to just leave her to have Angelis on that she plays live. But Yeah, I would. I don't know. It's always a joy to cover his songs. I think honestly, it would be so fun to do it at a show.
Well, you were talking about the lyrics and the kind of lyrical style, and the sort of honesty, and it just in kind of comparing it to your work, which I think is also quite kind of honest and vulnerable. Do you see those sort of similarities? Is that something that you're trying to like? You know, are you trying to get across that kind of like vulnerability and honesty when you're writing?
I think, I mean, yes and no. I think probably in a way, ideally, I would like to, because it's funny with Miss Misery, there's a vulnerability, but there's also a bit of a mask, I guess, behind it being feeling like a story, like a fictional story. And I'd like to do it more of that.
Yeah.
I can write songs and then they just seem to be very vulnerable, and then something, and then I think, oh, I'm gonna maybe try and make this less personal and less, you know, openly about myself. And I try and do that, and I haven't quite. It's almost like every time I try and alter lyrics, it really isn't what the song wants. It just sounds awkward, and so I realized that it, you know, the melody and the song and the lyrics kind of existed with itself already, and it's not something that I can edit into a story or edit into something less personal. But I would say that the, you know, the personal or the vulnerable nature of Elliot Smith's lyrics in general, and on that song, but in general, will have, if not consciously, but will have subconsciously influenced me a lot throughout the years. And it also makes you less scared to, you know, hearing someone pull their heart out in that way, like, makes you less scared to do it yourself. And it makes you, well, it just makes all of us as songwriters and as people who listen to music want to share those aspects of ourselves, or like the more difficult parts of our existence, with each other, so that we feel less alone. And I think it's very obvious that that's what Elliot Smith did.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Is it, have you always written in that way, or is it something that you've sort of like progressed into doing?
I think I've always, always. I remember I've been, you know, I'm a SoundCloud girl, and so like when I started writing songs, I also the same age, but I started writing songs at the same time as I was listening to Elliot Smith. So it was probably something when I was 15, and I've kept everything that I've ever written and any demos and everything on just this very long private playlist. And you know, a few years ago, I went back and listened to the very first song that I uploaded, and It's just as the lyrics are honestly like very similar, like in terms of style. And like, I mean, if anything, they're a little bit more vulnerable because I had absolutely no intention of it being heard by anyone. And I'm lucky in a way that my brain still, I still write songs without, I never consider anyone listening to it. You know, it's never something that is like enters my consciousness. Yeah. I never consider, like, it just doesn't enter my consciousness at all when I'm writing songs, which I feel like very blessed for, actually. And I don't want that to change, because it's just, it means that it kind of comes out, and I know, and it also is a control thing. I know I have the choice as to whether or not to share it with people. But yeah, I'd say my lyrics have always been like that.
You were very quick to point out that you didn't hear this song first in Good Will Hunting. Are you a fan of that film?
Yes, I love that film. Yeah. I think it's really good.
Do you like how the song's used in that film?
Yeah, I do. I don't have a problem. I think it's really, yeah. I mean, I know in general that seems like a weird pairing, you know, him with Hollywood, and I know that, I guess that was when he got a lot bigger, wasn't it, after that film? But the actual film, you know, when I first watched that film and then I heard his music with that, having already been a fan of his, I mean, I think the film's good. Do you like that film?
I love that film. Yeah. I mean, I actually watched it again recently. It's yeah, I mean, it's like kind of feels very of that sort of time in the,
yeah,
in there is a bit melodramatic in parts.
Yeah, I mean, thank God that, you know, I guess Elliot Smith's music could have been used in whatever films, in a way, if it was going to be, there's probably other films that would have been better, but like, that's a good one.
Yeah, 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 no, totally. Yeah, I watched it again and I was like, yeah, dude, it's still there, it still works for me, it still really works. Yeah.
But I know what you mean. I remember I hadn't watched it in a lot of years, and then I played it to a friend. But you know, when you're in the situation of, you know, recommending a film to a friend, and then you kind of get a bit embarrassed about it. That's like, come on. I know what you mean about the melodrama.
It's the, like, I don't want to ruin it for anyone who really, but you know, like the kind of, it's not your fault bit.
Yeah.
It's like,
I love that bit.
If you're in the right mood, it's amazing. But sometimes it's like, if I'm not in the right mood, is it really working? I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking too much about it. Maybe I just should let myself go and just enjoy it.
I know what you mean. It's on the edge. It's on the edge of the, but then they have to do that. You know, that's when something's either really good or really, you know, embarrassing, is that when it's on the edge of the two things. And it does, I feel like they just got that scene over the edge. And it, for me, it's like in the moving part, but it's close.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm happy to go along with that. I think the world's a better place if that is acceptable. So I'll go along with that. So just to kind of like finish us off, Naima, you're going out on, we're recording this at the end of March, and you're about to go on tour. Is that right?
Yeah, we've got some shows in Europe, so we're gonna be out for actually only 8 days, I think, and we'll be going to Germany and the Netherlands and Belgium.
And then what happens after that? Are you working on new stuff? Are you thinking about a new album?
Yeah, we've got a record almost done now. And I've sort of been recording it. I've done it a bit differently this time. Instead of, you know, a 10-day studio album where we just do the record and then it's done, we've been doing it in bits and bobs since August, and kind of recording parts of it in different places. And I've got a few more dates in the studio at the end of April to record the full band. And so, yeah, we've got a big old, it's quite a lot of songs. So it's quite a lot of work, yeah. Which is a good way, but it means it's taking a little bit longer, which is nice. It means I have time to reflect on it a little bit more than before, and I can choose the takes more carefully. It's easy to do, and I try to be, but you know me, I come back when you want me to. Do you miss me? Miss misery, like you say. Thank you very much to Naima for joining us on the podcast. It was great to have her as our final guest of the season. And thanks very much to all of you for listening, writing in, and sharing your thoughts over the course of the series. It really has meant a lot. We'll be taking a bit of a break now, but if you want to stay in touch, please do follow us on Instagram. We're at @myfaveesmithsong, where we'll be sharing updates on what we're working on. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you soon.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.